Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Richard Davey is here, and he is currently the head of the general manager, I should say, of the MBTA. But on September 1st, he steps up as Governor Deval Patrick's latest appointee to head the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. That makes him the person in charge of not just the trains, but all the roads, bridges, and tunnels in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, including the Big Dig. And today, it's reported that thawing soil has produced a water-filled gap beneath one of the Big Dig tunnels. So there is much to discuss. He'll be taking questions you might have for him at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. But first, let me welcome Richard Davey back to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. I can appreciate it.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
To your appointment as the head of MassDOT.
Thank you.
You're filling some pretty big shoes with current Secretary Jeff Mullen.
Enormous shoes. Jeff has been, to me personally, a great mentor and a great friend, but to the Commonwealth, a great transportation leader. I mean, he's really combined a number of agencies that didn't talk to each other, avoided one another for a long period of time, and has really focused us on thinking about our customer, not about each other.
Well, we want to talk a little bit more about the goals of efficiencies and streamlining those transportation departments in a little bit. But let's just hit on today's news.
Sure.
About the Big Dig Tunnel, under which there's a, thawing soil, as we've said,
yep,
has produced something of a gap. The question I want to ask you about that is, it seems to be the latest in a long series of, you know, we had one catastrophic failure, but since then we've had, all these small, perturbations, or maybe more than perturbations,
right,
in the central artery system. So my question for you is, at what point in time will drivers be able to feel assured that the place really is safe?
Well, they should feel assured now that it's safe. But I think what probably the real question is, when can folks feel assured that it's, that's not the safety question, but it's the maintenance question. I think folks, we spent a lot of money on this project, obviously. Was it mismanaged? Yes, it was. Was it overpriced? Absolutely. But you know what? We have to manage the situation, and that's what we're going to do. We're not going to, rip it out of the ground. We're not going to put the central artery back through the downtown Boston. So we have to manage through that. But at the same time, while it is an expensive tunnel, it has to be maintained. So we can't just spend $14 billion and then leave it aside for the next 50 years. That's the reason why we've gotten to the problem in the first place with all of these roads and bridges that are dilapidated. You have to invest in the system. For example, you mentioned leaks. I mean, the tunnel is going to leak. Most tunnels do leak. The question is how much is it leaking and what are we doing to mitigate that? We've got a few things. The story that we talked about at our board yesterday on the soil was not a surprise. The soil was frozen to make sure that the tracks at South Station would be kept solid while they literally dug a tunnel underneath South Station to keep the red line and the commuter rail active without any interruption. We knew it's been thawing since about 2002, 2003.
It is a surprise that the thawing is happening so soon, though.
There are two surprises. One is that it should have, it's taking a lot slower than it should have, which is one piece. And then the second piece is the engineers back in 1995, again, 15 years ago, assumed that the thawing would not have as much of an impact around the tracks, that there would be settling of the soils, and the settling is a bit more than was anticipated. Mm-hmm. But again, the point is, folks asked us yesterday, why is that? I don't know why this was misconstrued or otherwise miscalculated in 1995, but we are managing it now.
Okay, so let me ask you, because you,
sure,
mentioned something which is central to, I think, it is the problem that the Transportation Department faces. Secretary Mullen has very frequently spoken about this, and that, you mentioned we got to pay for maintenance.
Right.
We have to take care of the system. But the problem is the funds aren't there. I mean, for example, the 2012 budget for all of the state's transportation services, MassDOT plus some others, is about $1.3 billion. That's actually a 5% drop from what I see from last year's budget. On top of that, we had one-time stimulus funding coming from the federal government.
Right.
Not going to have that anymore. Every year there's a gap. which is producing a maintenance backlog. So how are we going to pay for these things, which are essential to the health and safety and economy of Massachusetts transportation system?
And you hit the nail right on the head, particularly in the economy side. I mean, transportation is not only a jobs sector, but it's also a job growth sector. And we move folks to and from where they need to go to get the jobs. But let's talk about highways and bridges for a moment. I think the good news, let me start with the good news. The good news is that the Patrick administration has spent an enormous capital investment in getting our roads and bridges up, particularly bridges. The Accelerated Bridge Program, after the collapse of the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis 4 years ago, the Commonwealth did respond with a very aggressive program. Structurally deficient bridges in the Commonwealth have been reduced by 16%, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of good stuff going on there. So that is some good news. The same piece, we do have some monies, both from the trust fund, the settlement of Bechtel and all the contractors of the Big Dig, to be able to spend money on the Central Artery Tunnel, and that we are doing to do things like the soils and the remediation of some of the water. But there are other portions of the Commonwealth's assets, portions of I-90, for example, and some of our other local roads and other roads that do need paving and do need assistance for sure.
Well, and here's why it's so important, because, I mean, as you well know, back in 2007, I believe, a Blue Ribbon Commission, right. Organized by the state to look into the state's transportation funding crisis, came out with a report that said every single year, the state is $1 billion in the hole when
Correct.
It comes to even just maintaining the current standard of our roads, bridges, and tunnels. $1 billion just to stay where we are, and we don't have it.
That's right, and including the T into that. So $1 billion a year over 20 years. So they basically said it was between an $18 and $20 billion gap over about a 20-year period. That's right.
This seems to be your primary challenge. So, I mean, I guess I'm yet to hear an answer of, like, where you're going to find the money to, help
sure.
fix these problems.
So I think the first answer is we do have this Accelerated Bridge Program. It's a $3 billion program. So that has helped on the bridge side, right? And we have some monies, as I said, for the Big Dig to continue to invest in that piece. I think the areas where we need to be concerned, listeners need to be concerned, one is the federal government. I mean, we saw what has occurred in the last 25 days in the debt ceiling. I can tell you that in the next 45 days, there's going to be a discussion in Washington about a surface transportation bill, which may or may not be funded. Right now, it looks like we could have an up to a 30% cut in our federal aid for both transit, so the T and the regional transit authorities, and for our road and bridge program.
A 30% cut for Massachusetts aid.
Correct. Across the United States, but Massachusetts would see about a 30% cut in our program. What does that mean? It's about $200 million. That's significant. So that's one piece we have to be concerned about. But then we're also having a conversation across the Commonwealth. We've been out with the chairman of the transportation committees, Senators McGee and Representative Strauss, talking. We were out in Worcester 2 weeks ago. We're going to be out in Pittsfield and Springfield, probably in mid-September, talking about what investment we need in the system. So we're not there for a funding source yet, but we certainly need to be thinking about what kind of transportation system do we want in the mm-hmm. Commonwealth, knowing that the federal government is really likely to take a step back from its funding obligations it's had since in the mid-1950s.
So what options does that leave the Commonwealth in terms of raising these funds then?
Well, again, I think things like the Accelerated Bridge Program, that was a $3 billion program. Could we duplicate that? I think that's something that's a possibility. But we also have other priorities as well within state government, too. So we need to be cognizant of that. On the T side, I've said as GM and certainly as secretary, everything is on the table for next fiscal year, which includes the possibilities for fare increases. Something we're studying now. We haven't had a fare increase in 5 years, so it is prudent from time to time to increase fares. So I think that's certainly something we're looking at.
To be clear, though, mm-hmm. it's been 5 years, but prior to that 5 years, there were three fare increases in a row.
Well, that's true, but to also be fair, then there hadn't been a fare increase before that in about 10 or 12 years. So I think what the public should demand is some more balance when it comes to fare increases, so that we know that they're every few years, but they're modest. I think what the T runs into is there isn't a plan to do a fare hike, on a regular basis and more modest. What we're mm-hmm. usually faced with is something that occurs in a fiscal crisis.
Yeah. Forgive me for pressing you on this, how are we going to pay for maintenance issue, but I used to cover transportation for WBUR.
You still are, right?
I am. And this is absolutely the 8 million pound gorilla in the room when it comes to anything transportation-related in the Commonwealth. I mean, for example, even just recently, the possibility of an increase in the gas tax to, you know, directly pay for our whole transportation system, or at least in part, has come up again. And it's such a hot-button issue. Here I go mixing my metaphors. Such a third rail that, you know, Governor Patrick says he's looking at all possibilities.
Right.
You know, reporters chase after him saying, what about gas tax? What about gas tax? And, you know, he's feeling very cautious about mentioning that. Just recently, Senator Scott Brown wrote a letter, you know, to Governor Patrick basically saying, don't do it. It's a jobs killer. That was his letter.
Right.
But, I mean, in response, there's a particular response that came from several transportation professionals around the Commonwealth that I just want to read to you briefly.
Sure.
You know, because Senator Brown asserted that Massachusetts drivers pay a higher gas tax than the rest of the nation, which turns out to not really be true because there are many other states that pay more. For example, and this is the transportation professionals, they're writing saying, gas taxes are much higher in neighboring states such as Rhode Island, which is 54 cents a gallon, and in Massachusetts, I believe it's 42 cents or so per gallon. Mm-hmm. New York is 65 cents. Connecticut, 63 cents a gallon. Our gas taxes are closer to those in states like Louisiana, West Virginia, and Missouri than in those states such as California and Illinois, which are our economic competitors for both talent and jobs. And again, these professionals assert these states have chosen to levy higher gas taxes in order to invest in their transportation infrastructure and economy. So getting back to the, you know, why is it that we want working roads, bridges, and tunnels? My question to you is, you know, you can almost understand why the governor doesn't really want to make a clear commitment right now, because it is such a third rail, raising gas taxes, especially in this economy. You have are in an appointed position. Mm-hmm. You don't have to run for your office. I mean, is this something that you're willing to take a stand on?
Some would say
on?
I have to run away from my office, but that's no.
I mean, is this something you're willing to take a stand on and say, look,
absolutely,
for us to be able to make that billion-dollar gap to close it, this is something we need to do.
And I think that you remember the mantra, how we got here, which was reform before revenue, right? So we are, and so I think that's why it's important to remind listeners that, you know, the key charge for both Secretary Mullen and now me is to make sure that we have implemented reform, we're continuing to implement reform, and frankly, reform is the status quo now at the MassDOT. We've done a lot of things to save money, things like moving employees into the GIC, refinancing our bonding. There's still some more to do, though. I mean, we definitely have some more opportunities at the DOT to save some money through efficiencies and budget. And Jeff has set a great table for me. We're going to continue to do that. So I think that that's one piece that we have to make sure that we've squeezed every ounce of savings that we can out of the organization. And I think we're pretty close to that. The Lieutenant Governor, I think, has suggested that, as has the Governor. But we still have a couple of things to do. And then the second piece is going out and then talking to the public, listening to our customers, which is what the legislature is beginning to do through these hearings. What kind of a system do we have? What is the state of the system, right? What we've spent money on large projects. We have to get over this big dig hangover. I mean, that's done and gone. What do we want to be the next 25 years? We want marquee regional airports. Do we want excellent regional transportation authorities? Do we want roads and bridges that we can be proud of? And do we want an MBTA that really can be an economic engine for the metropolitan Boston area? So that's starting to happen now, too. So remember, reform before revenue was the mantra. I think we are very close on the reform, and now we're beginning that discussion with, you know, the taxpayer and the public. What kind of public transportation system do you want for Massachusetts?
Well, we are speaking with the, as of September 1st, the new Secretary of Transportation for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. He is Richard Davey. If you have a question for him, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. And we've already got a bunch of your future constituents on the line. So let's start in Cambridge, where Larry is calling. You're on the air, Larry.
Hi. First of all, congratulations, and I wish you all good luck.
Thank you, Larry.
I want to take issue with the comment that there has been no fare increase in 5 years. That may be factually true, but my understanding was the sales tax increase was significantly geared to support transportation, and maybe the T specifically. Could you address that?
That is correct. So when the legislature passed the sales tax increase 2.5 years ago now, $160 million went to the MBTA, $15 million went to the regional transit authorities, and $100 million went to, frankly, to pay off some debt on the turnpike. And I think as some of the legislature would say, that was you know, a measure that helped at the time. But as our costs, as the MBTA costs continue to grow, like healthcare, like the cost of the paratransit services, for example, electricity, you know, the whole host of costs and debt service, by the way, which is growing for the next 5 years, that the $160 million has allowed us to not raise fares the last 3 years, to your point. But that will not be enough to close our budget gap for expected budget gap for next year.
Let's take another call from Swampscott. Patty is on the line. You're on the air, Patty.
Hello. I'm actually not in Swampscott. I am on the parking lot that we call 128. I would like to ask the new Secretary of Transportation turn his attention, please, to this road on which many of us grew up, but which has gotten absolutely unbearable over the years. I have to make this trip many times a week, and unfortunately for me, I take public transportation to my job, but I often am on this road, and it doesn't matter, morning, noon, or night, even in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock in the morning with all the road work and all the traffic. It's just gotten unbelievably difficult to tread on.
Patty, thank you so much for your call, because I think you bring up a really excellent point. And if I can just sort of dovetail with what she's saying, this comes, you know, back to the fact that roads like Route 128, which are so incredibly important of getting people to their jobs, to their homes, to places where they want to shop. I mean, Patty's stating the obvious. They're in terrible condition. I mean, to be frank. And, you know, another thing that transportation officials say all the time is that we need these things to not, we don't even just have to worry about the kind of transportation system we want 10 years from now. We got to fix what we have today to make life livable and the economy keep moving here in Massachusetts.
No, you're right, Magna. And you know, Secretary Mullen has said it, and I agree with him. And at this point, we really can't afford what we have today. And that's, you know, something else that we need to be cognizant of. So I think to Patty's point, you know, a couple things. One is the condition of the roads is something we absolutely need to be investing in. And then two, to mollify some of that traffic, we need to be investing in our public transportation system. And I'm not sure we've connected those two. So, you know, drivers, for example, we might be saying, well, why am I paying more? You know, why is some of the gas tax going toward other things that aren't roads? Well, it's in part, I think, to keep people off the roads and allow, if we can build out a good public transportation infrastructure, that folks will be customers will be utilizing that as opposed to driving around the Commonwealth. So it's a balancing act that we need to when it comes to infrastructure investment.
Is there anything that MassDOT can do, you know, on the immediate horizon to help Patty and like to decrease the sense that, you know, 128 is just a parking lot most of the times of day?
It's a great question. So I don't know right now. This is going to be the next couple of weeks as I transition into the role, learning a little more about some of the conditions out there. So I know we are doing work out on 128. I don't know what part of 128 she was at, but we certainly are doing a lot of road work out there. You know, 93, for example, is another place. Last year we had that concrete piece fall.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that from the deck. You know, pleased to say that this summer we're actually making those repairs. So the DOT has, again, under Jeff's leadership, really tried to be creative in getting projects out more quickly, getting them funded, and getting them done. This weekend, we expect to complete that project in earnest.
Well, let me ask you something else about one of Secretary Mullen's stated priorities about, he had the job of bringing Massachusetts' very disparate transportation authorities all under one roof. Huge job that he's been working at for 2 years now. And one of his priorities, he said, was for this to be an institution that is outstanding for its transparency and its accountability. Now, on that point, I mean, recently there's been this concern over, just documenting problems with the Big Dig. I mean, you of course are familiar with engineer Helmut Ernst, who, you know, he was let go as a Big Dig engineer. Now, the reason why I bring that up is, you know, he said, "Hey, we don't even take good notes about this stuff. It's not part of the culture yet." And then he was let go. Now, whether the two things are related, I can't say. But my question is, does that not produce a chilling effect amongst other engineers
right.
in the transportation department who may want to come forward and say, "I see a problem here," but now they may be afraid of losing their jobs?
Well, again, I will say it. He wasn't. I mean, that was not the reason why he left. But the fact that you have a senior manager in the organization expressing that is of concern. Now, we had a reporter or a lawyer come in do a review of that statement, and that did not reflect, I think, the vast majority of folks that were talked about. But no, the bottom line is Jeff and the senior team have attempted to push very hard for more openness and transparency. I mean, what he said or those remarks about you know, not being transparent, which although I think we're also kind of taken out of context, but that's neither here nor there, it just is not the kind of organization that we're trying. Perfect example, I mean, the soils yesterday, I mean, those were announced by the management team in a board meeting. I mean, that's and the board meeting is open. So, and we did that on purpose because we want folks to know we're reporting out to the board. These are some issues that we found. We have been very transparent. I'd encourage any of your listeners to look at the website. We're updating folks on the railings. We're updating folks on the lights. Obviously, at the T, we've been extraordinarily transparent. We've been out all over the system talking to customers, listening to customers, and. You know, I think you had me on 6-8 months ago and we had issues with the T. We've been out front and center. Yeah, we've had a red line breakdown or yeah, we had commuter rail issues.
Well, these are things you can't really hide when you have a train full of people stuck underground for, you know, over an
enough,
hour.
Fair enough. But still, you know, but not pushing, not passing the buck on those issues is my point. So, and we're going to continue to do that.
Let's take one more call since you mentioned the red line. Let's talk about the T a little. Steve is calling from Somerville. You're on the air, Steve. Hello, Steve. Well, looks like he's not with us, but he wanted to know about that Green Line extension.
I figured as much as soon as you said Somerville. And so a couple of things. One, obviously, Steve was, I will guess, was probably calling to express some disappointment about the announcement we made a couple of weeks ago, which is that the Green Line extension, which we had hoped to open in October of 2015, we said, in fact, we were probably unlikely to do that. We put out a range of likely 2018 to 2020. Jeff and I, not happy with that, nor certainly was the mayor of Somerville and others, and we're going to see if we can claw back some schedule. But that, unfortunately, the reality right now is it does not look like we can deliver that project in 2015. We love the project. We are going to build this project. Not only is it a legal requirement, but we're extending light rail into one of the most densely populated cities or towns in not only Massachusetts, but up and down the Northeast. So it's going to get built, but it's just a question of can we do a better schedule than 2018 as advertised?
Well, actually, we have a Twitter follower named David who kind of wanted to follow up on that. He asked a little earlier over Twitter. He said, why wait? I mean, interest rates are really, really low now. You may not be able to get a better deal than you can now.
Well, that's in the private markets, David. The public
markets.
You can't
raise bonds at really great rates?
Well, we can. It's not that. It's a question of to the point on what was going on in Congress is a debt cap ceiling, right? So in other words, the Commonwealth has a certain amount of debt it's going to put out responsibly each year. So I mean that's not really relevant on that piece. But there are a number of other pieces we have to do to get the Green Line moving. There's environmental permitting we have to get done. We have to get some other documents done with FTA, which we're working on. Land acquisition. There's a whole host of items. But we think, I mean, we're optimistic, and Governor Patrick has told us at the DOT and the T. We need to do better than the 2018, so we're going to work toward that.
So last question for you. You take the helm on September 1st. What is your first and most immediate priority?
I think it's beginning to participate meaningfully in that conversation I mentioned earlier, which is what kind of transportation system do we want? So I'm pulling together a team. I'm going to have good folks at the DOT to run the day-to-day operation, but it's really going to be out, I think, coming out, talking to folks, listening to our customers, and then talking about what kind of transportation system that we want, and at the same time continuing to push the transparency piece that to make sure that customers and folks have confidence in the men and women at the DOT.
Well, that is Richard Davey. He is the general manager of the MBTA. On September 1st, he becomes the state's newest Secretary of Transportation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You know, and listeners, there's a lot more news about the Big Dig. Sasha Pfeiffer on All Things Considered will be talking with the head of the Civil Engineering Department at MIT about true safety issues on the Big Dig and what he thinks about them. That is on ATC, All Things Considered, in just about an hour. Well, finally today, a quick item about the clash of Eastern religion with a New England way of life.
And you might have heard about this last week. A group of Tibetan Buddhists left their temple in Medford and headed up to Gloucester and bought some 600 live lobsters.
Which set them back about $3,000.
Then they chartered a boat, headed out to sea, where they prayed, chanted, and released the lobsters, saving them from near certain death in kitchens across New England.
And why, you may ask? Here's Geshe Tenley, one of the Tibetan monks, speaking through an interpreter to NECN.
So we extend their life a little bit. But then we also help create karmic imprints so that they have more positive future lives as well.
But then came news that a group of Gloucester lobstermen, apparently unconcerned about their karmic imprints, headed out to the exact same spot in the ocean, set their traps, and recaptured the very same lobsters.
All 534 of them. The lobstermen even posted a video of their exploits on YouTube, and the story of the short-lived lobster liberation went viral.
But here's the thing. That part about the Buddhists releasing all those lobsters, that really happened.
But the lobstermen recatching them all? Well, that didn't really happen. Here's Joey C., a Gloucester fisherman who blogs about life on the water, talking to the Bob and Sherry radio show in Charlotte, North Carolina.
My lobstermen, they went out and they took a video saying they got the coordinates and they checked the traps on the lobsters and they got the same amount. But anyone that really is on the ocean, you know that's virtually impossible. But it was a skit like you would see on Saturday Night Live.
So that part was a hoax. And Joey C. of Gloucester says there's a final irony to this story.
The craziest part about it is I believe in Buddhist principles. I don't take it as far as I'm not a vegan and stuff like that, but like I credit a lot of the success that I've had due to a lot of Buddhist principles.
And thanks to those Buddhist principles, the lobster lives were extended.
Though, of course, for how long, none of us can really say, and lobster roll sounds like an awful good idea for dinner. It's just me.
Well, a quick update before we go. Earlier this hour, when we were discussing our weekend arts picks with Jim Sullivan, Jim recommended the indie road comedy The Trip at the Coolidge Corner Theater. He mentioned that it's playing on one of the small screens and tickets are limited, but we should also say that the film is running at the Kendall Square Cinema and the West Newton Cinema, so plenty of options out there if you want to see The Trip.
Coming up tomorrow on Radio Boston, legendary power pop band Fountains of Wayne perform live in our studio, fronted by Northampton's own Chris Collingwood. That we review the week's news. That's tomorrow on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com.
Our show is produced by Adam Ragusa, Jessica Alpert, Dan Mossy, and Jason Breslow. Our interns are Amory Sievertson and Maddie Neufeld.
Jeremy Bernfeld is our web producer. Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.